Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I'm joined today, as always, by my co-host, Jacob Negro. Jacob, how's your weekend, sir?
Pretty good. How was yours?
Right on. Oh, a little boring, man. I had to work a bunch.
Yeah.
There was, what was this weekend? Some kind of qualifier? The Arena Championship qualifier?
Yeah, the best of one play-in.
Okay, and I saw that you went 6-1.
Yeah, I got in on my first try with my play-in points, so complete free roll.
Okay, nice. Cool. I didn't play that. I did play some of the sealed format today, or over the weekend. Definitely not my favorite. I'm looking forward to this weekend. We get to play in Arena Direct for Japanese cards.
Yeah, I was seeing that. Seems like pretty good value, honestly, because two MH3 Japanese bot play booster boxes is pretty valuable compared to two normal play booster boxes or set booster, I guess, depending on which set it's from.
Yeah, solid. Do you think you're going to play in that?
I'm probably going to prioritize the qualifier weekend.
Oh, that's the same day, huh?
Yeah, I guess the Arena Direct might start Friday, but I probably won't have as much time Friday, but yeah.
Yeah, I work Friday, so Saturday is like my day to play, so I'll have to see. Today we're going to be talking about Through the Omen Paths, or Spider-Man, way to think of it. Bit of a controversial set.
Yeah, and it's kind of the topic today, at least because it's what I'm invested in a little bit with the qualifier weekend. And I've also found the sealed format, you know, it's not super exciting, but it's also, compared to the draft format, this feels like pretty normal sealed, and the draft format is kind of one of the worst ever, it seems like.
Yeah, the draft format's really bad, but that's mostly because red is really bad, so there's a color imbalance, and then since there's only five supported color pairs, and it's a small set, so it's really only five supported color set pairs, it makes drafting really awkward, because, you know, two of the pairs just aren't even viable, because a red is so horrendously bad.
Yeah, and that just, luckily, color balance really doesn't move to sealed very much at all, I think, in any format. Like, you're just going to open and play with your best cards. And you know, because red is so bad, I think probably only like maybe 1 in 20 pools or something, I would guess, like you're supposed to play red as one of your two base colors, if anything, but that doesn't matter much. Luckily, also with the set being smaller, it's kind of hard to tell. I was looking at some numbers. The set has about the same number of rares and mythics as most other sets. So the smallness of the set actually is in the commons. So it actually makes the pools, I guess, repeatable. Like, you end up getting duplicates of commons, and it's not that weird.
Yeah, so it's, like, easier to practice for, in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because once you've done a few, you kind of know how they work.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of content creators aren't even covering this set, and I kind of understand it. But at the same time, if a few content creators cover it, I mean, hopefully that'll be useful for the niche amount of people who do, for example, want some information or just want to listen about it before they play in the qualifier weekend this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. With the set being so small, I don't think we're going to do a review of every single card in the set, but the goal is if we talk about the cards because it's either probably really good and sealed or something to keep an eye out for, or I guess we might bring up a card that, you know, if it's a rare that might look good and we both think is bad, something just, those are things that I think can really swing your sealed pool decisions, because you just want to play around your best cards. So knowing what the best cards are and knowing which cards might be traps, I think is kind of the goal here.
Yeah, so we're just going to briefly go through all the colors. We'll start, you know, look at the commons first and then look at everything. And then towards the end of the show, we are going to do a quick sealed pool on Arena for our YouTube watchers. We will do our best to make that audio experience okay for the podcast listeners, but if you just want to, you know, switch over to YouTube or skip that last 20 minutes or so, that's totally fine. Before we get started, I want to remind everyone you can follow us over on patreon.com/stockuppodcast. That's where it's the most helpful for us. We have one tier at the moment. It's $1 a month. With that, you get access to all of our content. And, of course, you can also find us on YouTube, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So Thank you very much for all our patrons.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's get started here. Before we start going through the colors, what are some big picture thoughts that you've come away with after playing some Sealed?
Yeah, so I think the three best colors are white, black, and green. It'll sound kind of weird, but I think a lot of pools are supposed to be based black and green. And that's because I think oftentimes you'll open a black bomb. That doesn't always happen, but a lot of the rares in black are really strong. So when you do open them, you're going to try to make an effort to play them. Also, a lot of them have double black in the cost, so you kind of really have to commit. The fixing, if you play green in this format, is usually pretty good. So by playing green and black, I find you can often play like all of your best cards and splash them. I don't think it's that weird. Some pools obviously are going to be lacking the fixing. And then on top of that, because white is so good and because green-white is so good, I think some pools also just have a really good green-white deck, similar to what you'd want from a draft deck in this format. And that's also an excellent pool.
Yeah, so I think I've done less Sealed than you overall. I noticed the same thing where most of my pools were green. There are some good rares, and there's not a ton of like synergy within the cards themselves, so you really do want the rares. It's kind of core set like in that way, and green has all the best fixing, so it also is just sort of deep. The commons are pretty solid, so I'm usually doing green. I've had a couple green decks that had black in them, but not like a dominant green black deck.
Maybe I'm just hitting on the rares more often.
The removal in this format's interesting. Blue doesn't have great removal. Green has some good removal, although some of its fight spells I've found to be kind of awkward because most of the creatures in this format are pretty small. So like the 3-mana common green fight spell is a little worse than I thought. And then red is just really bad. Like not only are the synergies not great and the mechanic like madness isn't great, but also just the mayhem. Yeah, also just the color is kind of weak, like the cards aren't very good. So
yeah, mayhem is really poorly supported in this set. The discard outlets are not very good. The fact that you're locked into sorcery speed with the exception of a single card, which is only a 2/2 flying, it's not even that good, means even some of the card designs are weird. You know, there's like a black uncommon that lets you connive at your end step, and it's like, what is that doing there? You know, like
yeah, totally. So you know, the good removal is in black and white, pretty much. So it's going to make sense to play those colors with
your green. Yeah, and white has two of like the best removal spells at common, which is also why I think you'll find a lot of pools are white.
Yeah, totally. So those are sort of the big picture thoughts. It doesn't seem like it's too much of a you have to open the best rares kind of set, you know, to its credit. The rare power level isn't too through the roof, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, there's a few outliers, but that's always true. But yeah, I think a lot of games can be won with kind of normal rares or just a strong deck. Definitely, I think in Sealed, you don't have to get as attached to playing the allied two-color combos because you're not really looking to have a super cohesive deck.
Right.
You're just looking for raw power level. Like there's even, you know, there's two, I think, black white rares in this set, and I mentioned white and black are strong colors. Like I don't think it's weird for a pool to be white black either.
Yeah, there's like a whole cycle of allied color or enemy color rares that make drafting really awkward, because if you pick them, you're just kind of putting yourself in a weird spot. But for Sealed, it works just fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll go ahead and get started going through the set. We are going to be using the Through the Omen Path cards because I think most people who play with this, interact with the set, are going to be doing that.
Yeah. It's a little weird. I don't know if there's going to be like another arena event with this set in November before Avatar. I'm guessing no, but maybe. The concept of an arena direct for the set, I guess, is just too weird because you'd be winning Spider-Man product, and they probably can't even put a picture of the Spider-Man product on their arena client, if I had to guess.
Probably not. I mean, that's, I've actually assumed that's why there hasn't been anything for like a month.
Yeah.
Directs or anything. So okay, so when you're looking at white, what are some of the better commons here?
Certainly Moth Wing Shroud, which is the 2 and a white Oblivion Ring, basically Banishing Light, and Spectacular Tactics, which is kind of better than Valor Stance was. It's a common. I mean, it's slightly different, but you know, it's a hexproof +1/+1 counter trick or destroy a creature power 4 or greater. The 4 or greater is a decent line in the set. Most of the really problematic cards seem to have 4 power. I remember even at pre-release in this set, we'll get the Omen Path's name, but the blue-black 7-drop that lets you draw until you have 8 cards in your hand is conveniently a 4/8. So the fact that a premium common instant speed removal spell actually hits it is a big deal. Niche is the Omen Path name.
Gotcha. Is there some bird torture going on over there?
No, it's a chihuahua howling.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. Okay, so yeah, I have had this card stuck in my hand once or twice, but for the most part, it's quite good.
Yeah, I mean, being modal makes it a little hard to be stuck in your hand, right?
Like, for sure, yeah.
Even if your opponent is not casting removal spells, you might just be able to use a +1/+1 counter as a favorable combat trick. And, you know, historically, tricks that leave a counter behind actually really overperform. It's kind of a thing that I think wasn't in Magic for decades, you know, almost. And now there's like one every set where it's like some hexproof trick that gives a counter, and they always seem to
they're really popular now. Yeah
but the, like trading 1 for 1 with a removal spell, you end up usually up mana and you are left with your creature being better, which means it is now more threatening and it was already something they wanted to kill. It's pretty impressive when it works. This card also being a removal spell that hits the strongest of the cards in the set is kind of perfect.
Yeah, and it can be a combat trick too with that +1/+1, although that's more niche.
Besides those two, I think there's a lot of support for the green-white kind of in Web deck at Common.
Totally. And Web, I've noticed, is one of the ways that you can gain an advantage without high rarity cards, mostly because of some of the green cards that you could bounce, or the Citizen, the hybrid 2-green, hybrid white, 1/1 that ETBs and draws a card.
Yep.
So do you like, do you see City Pigeon or Darvel, whose Web protects? That's the 1 mana, 1/1 flyer, or the 3 mana, 3/3 within Web. Do you like either of these cards?
Yeah, if I'm doing that thing, I like them.
Right.
Which, if I'm base white, then that probably means I want to be playing these cards. I think there's two ways to approach white. I'm a base white deck, and I'm really leaning into this sort of a Web thing. Or I am green and some other colors, and some of the white cards make my deck, but when some of the white cards make my deck, I'm mostly talking about the rares and removal spells.
That makes sense.
The referee is also a crazy strong common.
Yeah, I almost brought that guy up. I actually haven't had him in many decks, but he seems pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I think this card, if it didn't have the choose one and just put the two counters on one creature in itself or two different creatures, this is just a card that would be a strong common in many sets. But it's also just modal, and it's kind of modal in the perfect way, because if you played an early 2-drop and it traded off and this card maybe doesn't have a second creature to put a counter on, then instead it's kind of a Gravedigger.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on to the uncommons, certainly the best one that I can see here is probably the Sarn, the Silken Throne.
Yeah, that one's great. I mean, Sudden Strike is totally fine. I actually think it's worse than the commons, but
yeah, it's interesting that it's more situational probably than something like Tactics, and certainly something like Mothwing Shroud.
Yeah. The Shroud's also nice because there are some like artifacts and enchantments that are kind of scary in this set too, so.
Yeah. So Sarn, perfect for the Web deck. I mean, you'd probably play it in any deck, because you could always play it later in the game, bounce a cheaper thing, and then replay that to get the double trigger to draw an extra card.
Yeah, the bounce is not a given in a late game deck. Sometimes it's hard to actually pull off in Web, but it's pretty solid. Definitely a draw to be the in Web deck.
Yeah.
When you're doing the in Web deck too, I guess there's not really much support for this in white, but in green, there's a couple cards that help you tap your creatures. Just something to keep in mind. You don't always have to go into combat with these creatures to bounce them.
Right. The vehicle, there's a pretty strong vehicle in green. Yep. And a green mana creature.
Support appearance. We'll get to that later, but yeah.
Totally. How about Azora Spider Fancier? You ever find this one in your deck?
Yeah, usually when I'm the green-white deck, I have a lot of spiders, and it plays out pretty well if you have a lot of spiders.
Yeah. So it looks low impact, 1 mana O2, but you're saying it pays off. How many spiders do you think you have to have in your deck, roughly?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, I'd be thinking probably over half my creatures or things like that. I'd want to be spiders. But, you know, there's some cards, too, that make multiple spiders in one card, things like that. It's also, you know, you still gain life off any of your creatures. So as long as your deck has a high quantity of creatures in general, that's also going to be at least a little impactful. I know a 1-mana O2 that just gains some life wouldn't be good enough by itself. But the fact that, you know, if you get a couple counters off this in a game, then that's, you know, 2 power and toughness worth of stats. That I think that's pretty much worth it.
Totally. I don't know. I'm going to guess you haven't had a chance to play with all of these rares, but we might as well go through the best ones, starting from the top.
A lot of them, given the small set, but I guess some of them I've chosen not to play.
Mm-hmm. We'll start with... maybe we'll start with Chosen by Valkavoth, as it's probably unplayable, right?
Yeah, I've had this in multiple pools, haven't played it.
So there's a blue-white... Well, it's a hybrid blue-white card, so it's in a way it's just white also, that searches for auras.
Yeah.
Is that appealing to you at all?
No, not really. I just think this is too bad of an aura. It's not even very good when your creature doesn't die.
Right. Because you'd have to have it on a really big creature, and then at that point, you're asking to be blown out. A Demi of the Silk Shoots, 2-mana, 3-2 flash. You can pay 1 to either give it flying until in the turn, or to sacrifice it and give all your creatures hexproof and indestructible.
Really strong card, but I probably wouldn't splash it. You know, it's not going to win a game. It's not the type of rare that wins a game by itself, but it is a really above rate 2-drop.
Yeah. It is nice that you can flash it in like a big combat potentially, but obviously that's a little bit of the best case scenario.
That's true, though. I mean, that flash give all your creatures indestructible is kind of a late game trick is certainly something that can be a 2-for-1 or more.
This next one is one of the few cards where I remember the name of the Spider-Man version. It's Confessor's Binding for 1 white mana, and I know it's called Rent is Due, which is brutal card.
I don't imagine I'd play this card.
Okay, you don't. Have you tried it?
No, but it has this weird fail case, and you're also just going to take a million damage to tap your creatures to pull this off. It just doesn't sound good to me.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in play yet.
Yeah, I haven't been on the other side.
Maybe this would be more of a draft thing. I figured I would try it in, a small white creature in web deck. It sounds like it could be but I'm
trying
sure.
to think can you even make treasures in this set? Yeah, you can, but there's not,
green
repeatable.
Just 1 or 2 guys. So this card, at the beginning of it's an enchantment for 1 white mana. At the beginning of your end step, you may tap 2 untapped creatures and or treasures you control if you do draw a card. But if you don't, you have to sacrifice it.
Yeah, if this was in an Ixalan-like set that actually had a lot of treasures, I'd be way more about it. But the fact that you, for the most part, just have to tap your real creatures and you put creatures in your deck to attack and block with, and this means you don't do that. I mean,
yeah.
If you think about it, it's just like this card draw spell that requires you to kind of be ahead on board, which is kind of disastrous.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's certainly not a card you can splash, and definitely beware with that one. And then let's see, we've got a Most Helpful Weaver.
This is very similar to the Ademi card to me, where it's just really good rates. I've had this a couple times, and it's the double strike is not insane. What ends up happening is, your opponent jumps with their worst creature, or they take 8 damage, or sometimes you're just behind on board and it's just a 2-mana 3-2. But
yeah, so it's really efficient, and if you have it right on turn 2, it's good. But the overall impact isn't terribly high, so typically you don't want to splash cards like this. The next rare, though, this is definitely probably the best white rare.
Yeah, Remarkable Readings.
Wow, okay. So 3 and a white enchantment aura. You enchant a land. When it enters, you get 3/1/1 white citizen creature tokens, and the land has pay 1 and tap it. Target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature you control. Activate only as a sorcery. So yeah, what do you like about this card?
I mean, just every creature you play will, or every creature you can like attack with each turn is probably going to be absolutely gigantic. This isn't even like that overcosted to make 3/1/1s for a 4-drop.
And you're always also getting that, even if you can't use the ability.
The white blue hybrid card that can tutor an aura. You just sometimes have sealed pools that have this card and that card, and it's like you have two of them in your deck. This card's splashable. I would try my best to play this anytime I opened it in sealed.
Yeah, honestly, that uncommon alone might make this the best rare in the set, just because.
Yeah, the fact that some of the decks just get a second copy of this is a pretty big deal. And you know, when you talk about like strongest and high impact rares, it's just like their mana cost does matter. You know, being splashable matters, costing only 4 matters. You know, there's some really strong and flashy expensive cards in the set, but they cost 7. And you know, totally. You can lose a game before turn 7, but it's really hard to lose a game before you can cast your 4-drop.
Yeah, and especially one that puts 3 creatures on the board. I've had games with this where I'm chumping every turn to something, a giant creature I couldn't answer, and I'm hitting them with a flyer, and I still win. So, what about these other 3 rares? Have you... Well, maybe we'll touch back on Verilex. What do you think of Cirrus, Spider Silk, Innovator, and Yera and Oski?
Cirrus, I mean, unless you really care about spiders, but you need to probably be able to activate Cirrus. There's some weird web-slinging things, I guess, if you can't. And you don't need to, like, make it a high priority, but it certainly should be, like, in the realm of possibility that you can activate this. And web text doesn't even matter, but, you know, it's just, like, a 2-mana 2/1 that then leaves this 0/1 around that can turn into a 4/4 later. That's what this card is.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good if that happens. But
certainly more of, like, an uncommon or good common power level type of card. And you have to be, you know... to have access to these other colors. What about Yera and Oski? Is this a good card? This is in web for 1 and it's a 3/3, so it's similar to the common, but it's got an extra ability.
It's a good card and that it's almost as exactly as good as the common, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
What about Verilex, the Haven Skin? This is white, 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 white. So 5 white for a 5/5. When you cast it, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And if damage would be dealt to it, you prevent that damage and put that many +1/+1 counters on him. So obviously an insanely powerful card.
I would have to guess if I played this card in sealed, I would have to be almost entirely mono white, maybe splashing my other colors. My pool would have to be really weird for that to happen. In fact, I think the most likely case that I would do that is because I opened 2 of this card. And I think it's a mythic, so.
Yeah. In draft, you can pick this early and maybe go mono white, but in sealed, I mean, if you don't have enough white cards.
Yeah, you have to A, have a ton of white cards, B, it has to still be worth it compared to what your other colors have to offer. So I really would guess, like, I'm probably never going to play it unless I had 2 in my pool.
Right. Maybe if you had opened a lot of dual lands in green. If you had, like, multiple green-white dual lands.
Yeah, maybe a green-white deck could just play this if you could get to, like, I don't know. I want like 12 white sources. Like
12, 13.
Yeah.
Ways to ramp. Ideally, so maybe on turn 8 sources. You can play it, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. 5 is just so many, right? Like, every land you play that can't tap for this is really likely to be in play by turn 5 or whatever. Like, it's really just not weird.
Really. Okay, so move on to blue. I know white was one of your favorite colors and blue was one of your least favorite, but which commons do you like the most here? Try to find them for you.
Yeah, it's kind of slim pickings. I like Ozor, this villain that can get hexproof if you have another villain and becomes an 8/8.
Oh, there he is. Yeah. But
once again, I think in the realm of like a black deck could maybe just splash this common. If you have a lot of villains, this card's pretty powerful. If it's coming down with hexproof, and you're kind of doing the thing where you fill your graveyard, this is certainly a pretty nice common. There also are a handful of, I guess, only blue cards maybe that can like clone a creature, but the copy isn't legendary. There's a rare and an uncommon.
Right.
Like, and that's a pretty good one.
Two-faced.
That's a pretty good common to look out for when you can do that. Mm-hmm. Because having two of them means they'll just both have hexproof forever.
Right. And they can be huge. I mean, how often do you get this up to an 8/8?
Not on turn 5, but I think, you know, once the game starts getting turn 8 plus, probably that's where it was designed around. That's where it's probably a lot more likely that'll have happened if you're playing some of the cards that do that. There's some self-mill. The Phantasmal Vision right next to it. If you are a base blue deck, you're going to want these. That's probably a reason you'd be a base blue deck, is because you have this card in your deck.
Yeah. So I will say this format, it might be a problem with the green decks. I've had multiple games that have either come down or essentially come down to decking already.
Okay.
Does playing not. A card like you have not? Okay, interesting.
I actually haven't really like played a deck with the vision, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you could just, this one in particular, I mean, you just stop attacking with it. It's not that big of a deal. Snatchback. It's another pretty good common, I would say.
Yeah, pretty committal to be into blue, though.
Double blue, yeah.
It's basically double blue. You want to be spending 4 on this. Vex mm-hmm. Bots is a, you know, it's an uncommon, but definitely a reason to be looking at the villain's archetype.
Yeah, so this is the 2-mana 1/1 flyer. Whenever another villain you control enters, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. It only triggers once a turn, but you can see how that can get out of hand pretty quickly.
Yeah, on a flyer, it doesn't take that much.
You know, another thing I noticed about my games was that flyers were really good, which is funny for a format with a lot of spiders, at least nominally.
No, I do agree that,
a lot of spiders.
Yeah, it's kind of in the same way it always is in traditional sealed. They're just...
That's true. For that reason, I've kind of liked Aurala, Hedron Scholar, 4-mana 3/3 flying, and then you can pay 2 and exile from a graveyard to give something else up, +1/+1 counter.
A little clunky to me to be like the reason I'm playing blue as a base color, but I'm not going to ignore it if I have other reasons to be blue.
Yeah, certainly one of the like solid playables.
Yeah.
Hide and Mundanity. What do you think about this card?
Yeah, so I had two of these in my pool with the one of the Aura Tutor creatures as well.
Okay.
My deck was 5 colors, but I did choose to play this kind of blue package of the Tutor creature and 2 Hide and in Mundanity over I had some black removal spells that all cared about having villains, and my deck basically had no villains. If my deck was a lot of villains, I probably would have played the black ones, but this card was cheap. You know, there are a lot of really strong cheap cards in this set, so this costing only 2 can matter a lot. You had mentioned though, it's vulnerable to in web not
it
you,
is
you can't
yeah.
attack with it. They have to have something to combo with it.
They do. So they have to have something to tap it. But I mean, presumably if you're playing this card, it's going to be in a deck where the game's going kind of long because you're happy giving them a 1/1 defender. And then that in web synergies I've found to be pretty popular and strong. So definitely watch out for that. I mean, I was putting it in my decks and I probably will continue to do so, but it's not as big as a pull to me once I've realized that.
Yeah, in my mind, I mean, because it gives defender, this card is like not that much worse than Passivism, and Passivism definitely has its issues in limited sets.
Totally.
And similarly, you know, the fact that they can bounce that creature has always been an issue for Passivism, but you know, there's been a lot of these types of cards they print, like Frogify or whatever, that the creature can still attack, which is kind of a disaster if they have equipments or can put +1/+1 counters on it. But this card is not like, the only way this card is a disaster is if they punish the fact that like it's an aura, not that the creature is a 1/1 defender. A 1/1 defender is like pretty close to not a card.
Right. And it's interesting to bring it up again, but that the hybrid 3/2 that searches for an aura, I mean, if I have that card, I'm pretty much always going to play my Hide Mundanity.
This is the best common to get with it. So
there you go. We've got, in terms of, how about Pinnacle Research Team? Is this card playable? 4-mana,
I think it's
1/5,
playable, but it's
7-mana, draw
2
cards.
And yeah, I'm not like excited about it, but I would probably put it in my blue decks, but I haven't splashed for it yet.
Okay. It is the sort of card where if the format was a particular way that was very unusual, I think it could probably be strong, but I think on average, I mean, you know, your baseline should be that to not really put it in your deck, I think.
Yeah, I would guess.
Yeah. Let's see. We can move on to the uncommons here. Is it, I mean, just talking about commons, there's not a ton that's pulling you into blue. What does pull you into blue?
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's blue-black gold cards, mostly. So.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
Makes sense. Maybe not even the rares aren't even that crazy here, huh?
Yeah, Gobin, that mythic rare, seems pretty crazy to me, but I haven't seen it in play yet. But that's one, you know, there's these flip mythics in all the colors that need three different colors to flip them. But that's one that if I couldn't flip it, I'd be pretty happy to still play it.
Yeah, it's funny. Strongest part of this card probably is the first half.
Yeah. No, yeah, notably, when you flip it, it'll keep any counters you got from conniving. So
yeah. So, and it's still pretty much unblockable on the other half too, with flying and menace.
Yeah, and you can the way mayhem works too, like if you had a ton of mana, you can attack, connive, flip this, cast the card from cast the spell from your graveyard that you discarded to connive if you had that much mana. But that's, you know, four weird mana on top of the rest of the mana of the card you discarded. But
yeah,
if it's like totally a 2-drop or something, I could see that happening.
Yeah. So 2-mana 1/1 can't be blocked whenever it deals combat damage to a player you connive, which is basically better looting. So, I mean, that's a very strong card.
Yeah, it'll get, you know, when you're flooded, then it'll just be happy that you have a looter. And when you're hitting them and you're not flooded, it's going to be really hitting them hard because you'll be discarding spells more often.
In terms of the other rares, I mean, there's some low impact slash unplayable ones like Belly on the Parch, 2-mana 2/2, Detect Intrusion, counter target instant spell. Imposter Syndrome. Haven't had this one. It looks whenever a non-token creature you control deals combat damage to a player, create a token that's a copy of it. Would you play with
this
card? I've
had this in my pools and not played it.
Yeah, it is 6-mana enchantment, so it feels a lot like a do nothing. I mean, you have to be kind of ahead for it to do anything.
Yeah, good with flyers. I guess the 1/3 vigilance flying, if you had a bunch of them, things like that. But
yeah, maybe if I was a really assertive blue-based flying deck, I could see trying it. But you're still, even if it's one of your better cards, you're going to have games where it's just a blank. So
Lost in Lajara is totally fine to me. I mean, I think you need to make sure your creature count isn't like low. I'd want like 14 or more creatures in my deck or whatever. But and I guess it also matters like the cost, you know, you want some more expensive creatures. They don't have to be like crazy, but you know, you want some 4 and 5 drops.
Gotcha. Yeah, this is the saga where step one, you surveil 3. Step two, you cast a creature spell that you've copied this turn. And then step three, you choose a card name. Whenever a creature with the chosen name deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Yeah, like, I think it's not hard to get all parts of this, basically. Like, either the two creature, like the creature you copy, you can name that, and probably like one of them can get in for combat damage that turn if it was kind of big, or you just have a random flyer in play and you name that, and that works, and you draw one card, and then, you know, if you play this on 4 and a 5-drop, like I think it's amazing, and then I already pointed out, but Ozar is like a perfect blue common 5-drop to do this with.
Totally, yeah. Let's see, Moretta, that's not really a good card.
No, not really playable.
Spectral Restitching. Can you do anything with this?
I don't think so. Just seems a little too situational. I don't think.
You'd have to have a ton of things with ETBs, basically, to even.
Yeah, and I don't think 2-mana Flicker is a good enough like protection spell.
Right. And then the last one, what about the Watcher on the Road?
So it
reads like a good card. Yeah.
Yeah, if I had a lot of villains, I'd be more interested in splashing it. But even without villains, I'll play it in every deck. I mean, you just try to trade off the illusion. It makes an illusion just off itself, so you just want to try to trade that off before it trades itself off.
Yeah.
But it's not a disaster if they like do something weird and aggressively kill your 4-mana 3/3 to get rid of both. Like, that's not that big of a deal.
No, totally. Yeah, it's the sort of thing where your opponent will probably be able to answer it pretty easily, but if they can't, I mean, it could be a strong card. You can move on to black. Black is one of the colors you like the most, so what are the commons that pull you into black?
Yeah, so the commons are definitely a little lower, but it has a couple 2-drops that I think are playable in Common Crook, and it's called Merciless something. Merciless Enforcers.
Merciless Enforcers.
Yeah, I mean, those are mostly just, like, decent cards that happen to be villains, which is kind of black and black-blue's thing, is to play a lot of villains, or at least make sure you have some. So those are nice. I think the Enforcers, you know, being in kind of anti-aggro card, but also a mana sink late game that drains your opponent of life, that's like a pretty valuable mana sink to have, you know.
I think certainly on a 2-drop.
In a lot of sets, and draining your opponent 2 life is pretty, or draining your opponent 1 life is like a pretty meaningful thing to spend your mana on.
Yeah. Let's see. So the removal at common is pretty good too, right? Damning Caress, strong card, destroy target creature, gain 2 life. It costs 3 if you control a villain, 5 if you don't.
Yeah, so certainly you want to be playing villains. Not unplayable if you have no villains, but it is a big deal to have them.
Scorpion Sting, instant speed, -3/-3. Pretty strong removal.
Yep.
Notably, interesting, a lot of these are, you know, single black. Makes them pretty strong. Coup is an uncommon, but it's an instant. You put target creature on the bottom of its owner's library, and then you lose 2 life unless you control a villain. But notably, there's a lot of villains in black, and yeah, some in are. Other colors as well. So it's pretty easy to get around the villains.
Yeah, these removal spells are like always going to make your deck in base black. It's mostly just a matter of like if you have removal in other colors, I could imagine not splashing these ones specifically.
Right.
If you're not playing villains. I guess I basically qualified with a 5-color Spiders deck where I had exactly this decision. I had a Remorseless Coup and 2 of the 5-mana one in my sideboard.
Perfect. That you brought in if you needed them. What about the higher rarity cards in black? What pulls you in?
Yeah. Hex of Undeath, super splashable, but also amazing.
Okay. Up to 6, return 7-mana sorcery, return up to 6 target creature cards with different names from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, I mean, this is like pretty your whole graveyard.
Yeah. Funny. We've got also at rare, the House Grows Hungry. I mean, this is kind of just another removal spell, right? Especially since the Madness stuff or Mayhem stuff isn't super good.
My first pool ever was a green-white deck that had the ability to splash, and I had 2 of these to splash, and they're basically only Chapter 1. In fact, it's possible Chapter 2 is a downside, but it's at least pretty symmetrical, and because the Mayhem cards, for the most part, are not instants, you can't really get punished by another Mayhem deck. So gotcha. I would say this is just about as good as if it was only Chapter 1.
Yeah, that's fair. I will take a quick aside. This card has super cool artwork. It's at the Through the Omen Pass is interesting because a lot of the quality control is definitely kind of all over the place. But some of the artwork's really nice. I kind of wish they made some of these cards in real life. It sure is an interesting decision that they've made to do this. So, end aside... Next, as a really high power card, we've got Luis Pompous Pillager, X black black lifelink, 2/1. The X means he comes into play with X +1/+1 counters and deals X damage to your opponent.
Yeah, so just a huge life swing. Super threatening card. You know, as the game goes long, this can be a giant burnout spell, but even, you know, I'm thinking like 5-drop in my mind is where you're pretty happy to play this. Like, that's like a Siege Rhino. You drain your opponent 3 life, but you have a 5/4 lifelink, so your opponent just has to trade with this or kill it immediately. Not something they can race ever. They might not be able to attack and do it the turn you play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this also has to be on the list for one of the best cards in the set. Uncommon
yep. here. Pretty good.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong villains, so getting back a villain, I mean, especially when you're in black, you'd be surprised how many of your creatures are villains.
Yeah, and a lot of these bomb rares are, too. Though some of them are weirdly heroes. Gwenum, or whatever it was called, the one that the Death Touch lifelink is not a villain, but Egrix.
Yeah, you can't really tell, but in normal Magic sets, you can sort of tell if something's a hero or a villain by looking at the art. You can't really do that in this set.
Yeah, I don't think they're spider villains.
Okay, so if it's a spider... It's a good guy, even though this guy...
Not all spiders are heroes, but I don't think they're villains.
Yeah, okay. Man, that spider does not look like a good guy, but we'll take your word for it. any other uncommons or rares?
This Rylex card I haven't seen, but it seems totally good to me. The flash means I think it's really easy on your turn or your opponent's turn to just, you know, set up a trade in combat and get the first card out of it.
Gotcha. That's the 3-mana, 2/3 flash menace. Whenever an on-token creature you control dies, draw a card and lose a life.
So ideally, flash means you get a card, and it's 2/3 menace, which is not like a totally ignorable thing. I think it'll get into combat a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this one's interesting. What about Vigo, Enforcer of Ig's Crossing, or also Venom?
Yeah, you have to be playing black-red-green, I think.
Okay.
The front half is not... There's not even a 1-drop I would want to play very often.
Right. There's like the pigeon.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, a lot of pools are black and green, and because they give you these allied lands and also Leyline Weaver, red is the easiest color to splash. So I do think, actually, when you open this card, it's not that hard to play it.
Yeah. Especially, like you said, if you're going to be playing green most of the time anyways.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, you could play this card and have black be easy to cast it, but it'd be pretty hard to flip, and I think that's pretty acceptable, because at the end of the day, it's still a 3-mana 3/3.
Yeah, definitely, but I definitely would not play it if I had no shot of flipping it.
Totally, but if you only had, like, 2 red sources and you were a black-green deck...
Yeah, that's fine.
Totally.
Terminus of Return I've had, it's amazing.
Makes sense.
That's
the Soul Stone.
Yeah, and notably, the 7-mana exile creature you control to harness it is not locked at sorcery speed, so what happens when I played with it is you just block and then exile the thing you blocked with, and now you have this ready.
Right. Where you can make your opponent's removal awkward if you want. Have you played with Wrench Speedway Saboteur? This is the 5-mana 2/3 double Gonti effect.
Amazing card. One of the better cards of Nil. 9 cards is like just search your opponent's library for their best 2 cards and put them in your hands. Like,
it's... Yeah, or 2 of their best, you know, 5 cards, certainly.
I know it's not literally that, but you'd be like, the 9 card sample is so many. It's really hard to not just find 2 amazing things. Like, I mean, comically, I've hit my land drop off this a lot too, because my hand was all spells when I played it, but still, like, that was my choice to hit a land. It's not like.
Right. Yeah.
Also, you miss. There's a sweeper there that's quite good. Villainous Wrath.
Okay, tell me about it. 5-mana sorcery. Target opponent loses life equal to the number of creatures they control, then destroy all creatures. Do you like sweepers in this format, you think?
Yeah, I think so, in these black decks. And that's like a really good line of text for a sweeper. Usually you play a sweeper because your opponent has a lot of creatures, so.
Yeah. And, you know, notably, sweepers are usually in, like, white or red, and those are the aggressive colors. Black is not necessarily an aggressive color at all, so it can much more so take advantage of a sweeper.
Yeah, that's a good point. As we have more sealed episodes, there's always these white sweepers in every set that are, like, questionable. But I think you're spot on that, you know, a black sweeper, that's the color you want a sweeper in your sealed deck in most formats.
Totally, yeah. We can touch on red here. I think we could probably skim red because, honestly, it's really bad. It's actually, maybe what we should just talk about is how
the
bad
cards
it is.
Cards out of play.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because it's like, it's not often a limited format these days has a color that's really unplayably bad, but, I mean, trust us when we say this really is one.
Yeah, and so I'll add context here. The reason why some of these cards might be splashable is because of the black-green thing, where red is the easiest color to splash when you're black-green.
Right.
So, for example, kind of first on this list, like, I'm not that excited to play Deathflame Burst in my deck. I'm not even really looking at the Mayhem deck thing. But, you know, if I'm really lacking removal and I want a 3-mana Flame Slash and it's kind of easy to splash, then I might play it. But
sure. But you're certainly not going to play these, like, double red rares.
Nope.
I'm not going to play these 2-drops.
I'm not going to splash.
Even this, like, double red guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I might splash a 5-mana 5/4 haste. That's just a pretty big card.
Yeah, especially maybe if you had a couple ways to do mayhem.
Yeah, it's just so hard because black is supposed to be this color that helps you, and it doesn't really.
it's a couple blue cards, I guess.
There's a black-red, I guess, hybrid common that does 3 damage.
Hmm. Yeah. The knife or whatever. Yeah, so thing about high-costing... You know, high impact cards, you find your splash color, then you get to cast them. And I mean, 5/4 haste, it's pretty solid. Let's see. Nia, Skysail Storyteller.
Nia seems like a really strong card to me that is hard to have. It's hard for me to imagine a pool that can cast it. Because you really want to cast the red half into the. You really want to cast the red half into flipping it. To get full value out of it.
Yeah. Although if you could just cast the back, that'd be okay. So if you were like blue-white splash red, I mean, you'd probably play it.
But blue-white is also like not a color combo I'm going to play that much, and red is the hardest color to splash in your blue-white deck because of how the lands work.
Right.
But certainly if you have a pool that it makes sense to cast this card in, then yeah, it's going to be awesome, I think. But it's just...
Mm-hmm.
It wins the award, I guess, for being like most awkward card in the set for me in my sealed pool because... It definitely looks like a really powerful card if you could make the whole card work for you, but
it's yeah. Hard to so on the off. Yeah, this is the 5-mana 4/4 Flying Vigilance Haste on the back. That's on the front side is a 2-mana 2/1.
Like
to exile something to play with it.
I've had two pools now with the 5-color spider, and that seems easier to pull off than this because this card kind of really wants you to. Obviously, it's not easier than just the back half, but this card kind of wants you to play a red card early and then flip this later.
Right, and that one's just like a little stronger. So, yeah, that's kind of about it, huh? For red, oh, Wisecrack. I've splashed Wisecrack.
Oh yeah, Wisecrack is probably the card you'll splash the most.
Yeah, this is just 2 in a red instant. Target creature deals damage equal to its power to itself, and if that creature was attacking, you also deal 2 to your opponent. So I mean. A little bit of a murder effect. I mean, it's a little worse than that, maybe, but sometimes you deal 2 damage.
Yeah, and mostly it's just the black-green-red thing, and yeah.
Yeah, so mostly stay away from red. We'll move on to green, and this is kind of the meat of the sealed, which is funny, because green's kind of been a big part of a lot of seals lately. But what is it about green that makes it so integral to this format, you think?
Kind of the same thing as always in Sealed. It's got large stats on the creatures, and it has good fixing.
Okay.
You know, when your creatures are bigger than your opponents, in a sense, that's virtual card advantage. If they're getting to the spot where your opponent can't attack, or sometimes can't even double block, or single block, definitely.
Yeah, if you have a 6-6 in play, and your opponent has, you know, a 4-4 and 2-3-3s, it's kind of like... A removal is better than any removal spell you could have.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as it stays in play.
They can stabilize you in a way that removal spells can't.
So Chizax has got to be high on the list of big creatures, right? It's just 6-mana, 6/6 common, reach, trample, ward 2. How important is the ward 2 on this card?
Super important for exactly what we were talking about. I mean, I think when your opponent has removal, you can expect this to die eventually, but I think this can often protect yourself the turn you play it, or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 6/6 isn't even that easy to kill to begin with, but you know, there's certainly things. I mean, I cast Hide on Mundanity on this and things like that too, just to get it out of the way. That, you know, another reason why I guess going back to that card being cheaper matters is because there's a giant common with Ward.
Yeah, you know, improvement over Colossal Dreadmaw also in the sense that it has reach, which is definitely really important. It's funny, this is one of the cards. The Clutter Cluster, 2-mana 2/3 within Web 6 that looks like it should have reach, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It does make spiders with reach when you unweb it. So this is a pretty strong card.
Yeah. It's also, it's so good at doing the unweb thing that now across multiple sealed pools, I have found ways to like crew my vehicle with this and bounce it to another thing within Web to keep doing it.
Yeah. This might be a good time to bring up, like, in Web Loops, which can be pretty strong. Yeah, I
guess this is really the only card I've done that with, because a lot of the cards, you know, you just get, like, so far ahead on board that, like, it doesn't matter, but this card is so, like, defensively slanted, gaining 3 life and making 2 reach creatures, that if your opponent doesn't have removal, like, you can use this loop to just, like, end up maybe making a chump blocker and gaining 3 life and then netting a spider, you know, every other turn or things like that.
Yeah, so I'm going to go down to the artifacts here to find the card that's essentially a green card. Green.
Yeah, Fine Woven Chariot, yep.
Yeah, so this is a really strong card. 2 mana, it's a 2-mana 3/1 vehicle, but really it's 3 mana, because when it comes into play, you want to pay a green mana to search your library for a basic land, reveal, and put it in your hand, and then as crew 2. So you can use this in a green deck as a fixing card, and you know, it is a 2-for-1. You get your land. The creature's not always active. You always have to have a board presence for it to do anything. So it's not like a super high impact 2-for-1. But then when you have this vehicle sitting around, it really can let a lot of your in web synergies string them together, so to speak, where you're bouncing, tapping creatures and webbing things that have in web and then playing them again. Another card that's in green that's, you know, technically green-white, but you can play it in just green. That's the 2-green-white hybrid 1-1, human citizen. When it enters, you draw a card. So even something as simple as that can be good. And it can be a way to gain advantage with these in web cards, even if you don't have rares.
Yeah, and while we're on that topic, uncommon, there's supportive parents, which also lets you tap creatures.
Totally. Three mana, 3/3, tap 2 untapped creatures you control, add 1 mana, and it's ungated, so you can just do it a bunch in a turn. Zan, Tunnel Web Explorer, this is the 5 mana, 4/3, in web for 2 and a green. When he comes into play, you Rampant Growth. So again, I mean, if the board stalls out, you can bounce this guy and do it a bunch of times and get all the land out of your deck, and it can actually be a reasonable plan. It also
My five-color deck had 3 of these, and I was happy with them, I was not planning on unwebbing them. I just was happy with the 5-mana 4/3 that got a basic.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I mean, that alone's certainly pretty strong for fixing. This is actually one of the cards I'm most hoping to open, I would say, in green, especially since it's just a common.
To add to that, you know, do I think a 5-mana 4/3 that searches for a basic is a little overcosted? Yeah. But in sealed, I really think about, like, what my cards are worth. And, like, a 4/3 is just going to be worth one of your opponent's good cards.
Oh, certainly.
Like, it's not just ignorable.
Yeah. I mean, if you've looked at all these creatures, a lot of them are pretty small. So, this is the higher end of creatures.
You know, I'll block in the 3/3 in play or whatever if I'm behind on board. I don't care, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it's a 2-for-1, it's synergistic, it's fixing, it's kind of everything you want for a common. Let's see, does that cover all the fixing cards? I think it does.
No, there's a... Sorry, go up a little. There's a 3-mana, 2/3 mana dork.
Right, do you, this is definitely on the weaker end. Do you still like this card?
Yeah, if I need to play it, I will. The spider thing helps. Also, it being a tapping mana dork can help you within web. You know, it's pretty good with the clutter cluster.
Right.
Tap this on turn 5 and then web your cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a bunch of spiders for later if the game kind of stalls out to put counters on. Adding that, if you want to scroll to Leyline Weaver, that one's much better at doing that.
Mm-hmm. This one isn't so much like a splash thing because you're not often playing red, although sometimes you will. But this is just like a really good on-rate green card for 2 mana.
Yeah, it's a green card that once again comically makes red really easy to splash in your green deck, mm-hmm. but you don't really have many red cards you want to do that with. But
I just had a seal pull that splashed Wisecrack basically because I had 2 of these in a duel. So
exactly, yep.
Let's see. How do you think? So Favored Fighter is a strong green common for sure. It's 4-mana, 4/4, so pretty big. When it comes into play, you create a treasure, and it can't be blocked by more than one creature. So I've been pretty happy with this. How do you consider treasure tokens towards splashing?
It kind of depends on the cards you're splashing or whatever. I did have 2 of these in my 5-color deck, and I was certainly happy. You know, it's just like giving me a critical mass of ability to cast these cards. Also, like the Bombier, the card you're splashing, it's kind of better because that kind of one-hit treasure, I think, just matters a little bit more. A treasure is also, like, pretty reliable compared to a mana dork. Like, it probably won't get interacted with.
Right. And so maybe it's good at casting, helping cast, like, if you're splashing one card of an off-color, but not so much if you're splashing, like, you know, 3 or 4.
Yeah, if you're a black-green deck with Niche, the blue-black mythic, then this counts, you know. It's one of the cards you're definitely looking for to pair with that to play it ahead of the schedule.
Right. In terms of removal, green does have removal as well. It's got Perilous Lunge, the 2 and a green sorcery where you put a counter on a creature and it fights.
Yeah, this card's okay.
Yeah, so notably it's like kind of expensive. It's not a bite, so to speak. It's a fight. So that's a lot worse. And then again, creatures are pretty small. So if your opponent does manage to get a big one, you might have trouble finding a creature to fight it. Terrific Team Up kind of gets around this problem.
Yeah, that one's amazing.
as a 4-mana instant that costs 2 less if you control permanent mana veil for 4 or greater. This one is a bite, and it targets 2 of your creatures, and those creatures also get +1/+0. So there's a lot of good, there's a lot of potential with this card. It's quite strong. Let's see. That's mostly the commons and the uncommons. Oh, how about this card? This one's interesting. Ancestral Carvings. Do you like this?
I have not played with it or seen it yet, but I knew the 17th land data for green, white, and draft said this card was amazing.
Oh, interesting. You know, this is the first set in a while where I just haven't looked at 17 lands at all, because I heard that basically there wasn't a huge data set for sealed particular.
The set, I remember, like, the stats on the set, to be clear on why it's so terrible or whatever, it, like, it's day one play rate, it seemed pretty similar to most other sets, and then it's, like, play rate 48 hours after the set dropped was, like, 25% of every set that's released in the last 2 years or something, like...
Yeah,
and it makes sense because it's not Spider-Man. I don't think that it's actually even the fault of the draft format being bad, though it does seem like it's bad. It's just the fault of the Omen Paths thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a factor, right? But I agree that that's probably a big part of it. It's like, why would people want to play with cards that aren't the cards that are in the set, etc., etc.? But so, Ancestral Carvings. 3-mana artifact. When it enters, you look at the top 5 cards of your library. You reveal up to 2 creatures and put them into your hand and put the rest on the bottom of your library, so notably not in your graveyard. And then while it's in play, it's a filter treasure, so you can pay 1 and sacrifice it to create a treasure, which is kind of like filtering, or I guess you could save up mana if you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to hit 2 things with this. I haven't done the math on that. My intuition is at least 16, if not like 18 creatures. I don't know. When I am in the category of I want my deck to have a ton of creatures, I'm thinking like 18, which doesn't leave you with many slots for non-creature spells, which is really awkward for sealed because you just want to play removal.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a little bit context dependent. I do think I'd play this if I had a lot of creatures, but I haven't, because it's an uncommon, I just haven't really tried it.
Yeah.
Because you both have to open it and then have a pool with lots of creatures.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the green-white deck, it makes sense, because that deck, its most powerful things it's doing is entirely creature-based.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all the... Boy, there's a lot here on green we could still talk about.
Yeah.
If there's anything you want to touch on first here.
Notably, Lurking Lizards and the cat above it, the common 2-drops.
Okay.
They're both villains. Which actually kind of plays well in the black-green deck, because the black cards care about having villains, and they're both pretty decent villains. If I mean, the Caracals is just kind of decent. It's a magic card, in my opinion. You haven't played with cards like this much. There's a lot more threat of activation going on here, where it's like a 2-2 unblockable all the time, which is pretty good within web.
Yeah, totally.
And then the Lurking Lizards, more so in a sealed deck especially, you know, having a lot of spells with mana value 4 or greater is not that weird.
Right, you're going to want to play your strong spells, and it's 2-mana, 1/3 trample, and whenever you play your strong spells, it gets +1/+1 counter, so that card can be quite strong as well. And yeah, the villain thing definitely comes up. In terms of, like, other synergistic payoffs, there's the Rouse the Swarm, which I've found to be a pretty strong card.
Yeah, you probably want some spiders in your deck, but the number can be super low. A 4-mana 3/2 reach that gains a life being, like, the floor. Not amazing, but you know, if you have some other spiders in your deck, then you're pretty happy.
Totally, yeah. 4-mana 3/2 reach is like very slightly below rate.
And the enchantment's sticking around, so when that 3/2 reach trades off and you draw one of your 3 other spiders or something a million turns later, it getting +1/+1 is gonna matter.
Yeah, and then obviously there's a lot of spiders in this set. Scout the City. Do you like this card? This is the sorcery modal card. You can destroy a creature with flying or mill 3 and put a permanent in your hand and gain 3 life.
Having a lot of permanents matters too. I actually think this also made the cut in my 5-color deck, and another point towards playing an aura removal spell instead of the sorcery removal spell in blue.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Just little things to keep in mind. Then, and you know, flying does matter. The flying, a few of the cards only have flying on your opponent's turn, to be fair. But this is kind of like a nice cycler. Gaining 3 life means that, like, spending the mana for the card selection doesn't hurt as bad.
Yeah. I found this to be a pretty decent card. It's definitely not an auto include, but it works out well enough.
Selesnya Archivist seems really good to me. There's even a lot of artifacts and enchantments in the set, but it's also very Eternal Witness-like.
Mm-hmm. Four mana 3/3. Either exile an artifact or enchantment or return target card with mana value 4 or greater from graveyard to hand. Let's look at some of the rares. What are the best rares in green here that you're definitely going to play?
So, I mean, Kren's pretty good even if you can't flip it, but flipping it is so broken that I would try hard to flip it.
That's a good point. Yeah, so definitely play it if you're in green, but try to flip it because the backside of this giant first strike hasty thing is going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, well, also, like, I've seen it in play in my deck and an opponent's deck. Like, that 2-mana ability is crazy. Like, if you ever untap, like, it just has this ability to give itself hexproof and then double the counters.
Mm.
And it doubles its own counters. So, like, you just untap with this. You spent 6 on it, so maybe you have 8 mana now. You just get to, like, spend 6 mana to put 3 counters on this attack, double its counters, and it's still, and you leave up hexproof on it with your last 2 mana. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a mythic, but yeah, definitely play that one. Fate Weaver, do you like this card? 1 mana, 1/1 reach, death touch. You can pay 2 and sacrifice it to search for a card that's both a spider and a hero and put it in your hand.
Yeah, I like this card. I didn't just realize it's activate only a sorcery, to be fair, but I guess that wouldn't come up much because when you block with it, you kind of want it as death touch, so you're probably happy to trade.
Right.
We've talked about this a lot in other formats, I guess, but, you know, a cheap death touch creature and one with reach is, like, pretty good defensive, but if you don't need a defensive card, this card is pretty likely to scale into one of the rares in your deck. So
yeah, or even, like, nice. some 5-mana, like, common or uncommon that yeah. would be high impact on the board.
Yeah, it can get Chizak, I believe, the common 6/6.
Yeah, there you go. So maybe not a splash card, but it would pull me into green for sure. This is a bit of an odd card. Explain how this works to me. King of the Cold Blood Curse.
Yeah, so when it enters up to one other target creature, loses all abilities, and becomes a 4/4 green lizard. That's permanent. So even if the king dies, that creature will remain a 4/4 green lizard, and the king itself is a 4-mana 5/5 trample.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually better to use on your own things.
Okay.
Because upgrading something to a 4/4 is really good. Draw I have been on the receiving end of is turn 2 Leyline Weaver. Mm. And on turn 3, you cast this, trigger, untap your Leyline Weaver, turn your own Leyline Weaver into a 4/4 and attack them for 4, and you have 9 power in play on turn 3.
Pretty nice, pretty brutal. But if I'm losing really bad to a rare, I could just target their card,
yep.
Right? Yeah,
definitely. Okay. And it's a 5/5, so it's bigger. But yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be, I mean, the versatility alone, that's got to be one of the better rares. Yeah.
Go anywhere else, buddy.
Another strong rare, we've got the Scouring Storm Soul. So 3-mana, star, power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control, can't be blocked by creature power 2 or less. That's already pretty good. It does have an ability to return itself from the graveyard if you also have a land in your graveyard.
Yeah, there is a common Evolving Wilds type land in this set.
Okay, there's an Evolving Wilds, and then, like, you know, Scout the City mills 3 cards. There's a couple other things that mill, so...
Yeah, the lands that come in almost every pack or half the packs also have 4-mana tap Surveil 1, so those will help you get lands in your graveyard at some point, even if they don't go to the graveyard themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. A couple of these other cards are just kind of cheap, good on rate. Tarn Tusk... Unwisely Awoken. Strength of Will. Is this good? Let's see. I'm going to read this really quick. Until end of turn, target creature you control gains indestructible, and whenever this creature is dealt damage, put that many +1/+1 counters on it. So
I'd probably play this, but I'm not that excited about it.
Yeah, it's like a mediocre combat trick that has, like, some good upside, but...
Yeah, it has, like, a buyout, right? Like, if you have a 2/2 and your opponent has a 4/4... As long as the 4/4 doesn't have trample, like, you could just block and throw this, and it's like a giant aura. It won't work as a combat trick, but you'll have a 6/6 later. But,
yeah,
you know, ideally you try to trade in combat and make your thing indestructible so it lives, and then it gets a big number of counters.
Gotcha, yeah, or but, maybe you could use a protection spell, but it's not the best.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I'm saying the buyout is this weird... awkward aura, but that's not why I'm playing it. I'm just saying that, like, you can do that with this card. And even though if they had removal, you'll get two for ones, even on a later turn, you might get two for ones. Like, at least you have that option.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, upgrading your 2-2 that late in the game would probably be worth a card. A Trail of Teacups is pretty strong. You have to be a little bit careful with it. But I mean, 4-man Enchantment Saga, step one is you mill 5 cards and then you deal damage equal to greatest power among creature cards in your graveyard to target creature. So notably not among the cards you mill. So you could wait until you have something, or you could just kind of run it out.
Every time I've had this, Chapter 2 did nothing.
Target creature gets +2/+2?
Yeah, but it was still a 2-for-1. Like, I played it, killed something, and then got something back on Chapter 3.
Yeah, Chapter 3, return a creature card again. So yeah, definitely a strong card, 2-for-1. Through the Omen Pass, another mythic. I haven't seen this one at all.
I haven't either. It seems pretty good to me.
Okay. It's a bit odd because it itself doesn't add any power to your deck, but it's like, you know, at the beginning of combat on your turn, look at the top 5 cards of your library and put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield.
Definitely want to be a very green deck doing the green thing with a lot of creatures. Mm-hmm. But I bet you could play this on turn 6 a lot of games with 2 creatures in play. On combat, get another creature, and then it kind of snowballs.
Yeah, I imagine that's pretty good. Okay, on to the multicolor cards here. So there's a couple we should probably touch on. The one I kept bringing up, the Serena Bargain Spinner. 3 and a white-blue hybrid, so 4-mana 3-2. During your turn, it's flying, and then when it enters, you search your library for an aura or an equipment and put it in your hand. So that's a really strong card. You know, several cards in white and blue that you can tutor, and some of them are rare, including this other one, this Angler's Shield. The 4-mana artifact equipment, when it enters, you attach it to a creature, and then it gets +2/+2, and whenever it hits them, whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card for each modified creature you control.
This is one of the main reasons for a blue-white deck, in my opinion, is that you opened this rare.
Totally, yeah. Especially if you also have the Bargain Spinner. Yeah, what other cards you want to touch on here in the multicolor section?
Yeah, I guess, you know, notably, I think blue-black has a lot of good gold cards, so that's kind of what I was talking about, where that might just be a reason you play straight blue-black, is you have multiples of these gold cards, and maybe you don't want to splash to make them work. Tearly and Tropic Hunger. That card's both splashable in these black-green decks I'm talking about, but also a great reason to want to be blue-black, and it's just an uncommon.
Right, totally. 4-mana 3-1, Flying Vigilance, Lifelink, and you can impulse from your graveyard.
Yeah, I mean, a Flying Vigilance Lifelink is just, like, such a amazing thing. You know, you can be behind on board and that 3-point life swing is actually going to win the race, and then the fact that you can trade with it and anticipate, or if they have to kill it, you just also get that due.
Do you like this Rishay Getaway Accomplice, 6-mana 4/6 flying?
Yeah, I think it's serviceable. I've played it. I think when it attacks other villains you control, gain flying is not something that comes up that much, but it's kind of the thing I was talking about with Sealed, where, like, maybe this is a little expensive for a 4-6 flying, but a 4-6 flying has a decent chance of being the best thing on the battlefield.
Right. Yeah, so, like, maybe not a bomb, but definitely some pretty good top end.
Yeah.
This is definitely a bomb. Niche Pinnacle Pariah. I mean, it's a mythic, so pretty understandable. 7-mana 4/8. Other villains get +2/+2. You draw a million cards on your end step. So that's definitely one to look out for. What about Mob Lookout? Do you play this card, or is it too weak?
I think it's too weak.
Okay, that's good to know. I've seen people play it kind of a lot, and I also kind of thought it was a pretty weak card, so maybe stay away from that one. Five-color Signs of the Earth Spider, huh?
Yeah, given I qualified with it, I'll talk about this.
All right.
Not every pool can cast a 5-mana card, but in this set, I'd say a decent amount of pools can. Obviously, you have to have the combination of both. My deck also had a lot of spiders. I think they make these goofy 5-color cards in, I don't know, like every other set, it feels like.
And a lot of the time, I ignore them.
Yeah. This one is a Haste Baneslayer Angel that turns all your other spiders into Haste Baneslayer Angels. I mean, it's...
Okay, I'm sold.
Yeah, it's pretty broken. You know, even if you can't cast it on turn 5 because you had to fix for it, you know, when I was casting it on turn 7... A haste without any other spiders in play, it was the game entirely became about it, and if they couldn't kill it, I'd untap and play another spider and they were dead. you know.
Wow. Like, that's really what it does. It's funny, I haven't read it yet since literally you told me. I mean, obviously I saw all these keywords, but
yeah.
Very nice. Okay. Yeah, I would try to play that. I mean, honestly, like, most of my pools have pretty good fixing.
Yeah, like I said, it's like, it's not going to be weird to cast this. It's also not going to be weird to open it and realize you can't. But, you know, it's...
Mm-hmm. So some of these other cards here, like Zakao, I mean, the fact that he's double red, obviously he's a really strong card, but I probably wouldn't play that.
I've tried this once, and that was my introduction to realizing I should not put that many red sources in my deck. It just felt like my deck was too overpowered to justify putting this card in it.
The very first sealed I did, I had a red-green deck with multiple of these... multiple Leyline Weavers, and I was like, oh, red seems fine. And then ever since then I've just never played red pretty much, so that's kind of funny. So you know, there's a lot of good rares here in two colors. You got to be careful with splashing around too much, especially if you're doing something like double splashing.
Ones I've seen, the Cheering Crowd, I know that's a hard card to parse. All I'll say, I guess it's low sample again, but I've played with it. It's volatile. It's going to be a high variance card. I don't know what the stats look like, but the last time I looked at the stats, they were really, really good.
Okay.
So when you take a high variance card, you know, sometimes it's going to lose you the game because you played it, and sometimes it's going to win you the game. So I would really kind of be looking at the stats to kind of make that decision of if it's a playable card, but the stats seem to say it's good. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's interesting. I didn't know that. So I've not had this yet, but I've seen it in play multiple times against me, and it's mostly been pretty good. I mean, like, you know, sometimes I can answer it, but a couple times I've been kind of flooded and it just sort of crushed me. So
yeah, I mean, it gets huge. That's what makes it, you know, it's symmetrical except that they have a giant creature in play.
Right. So I think on balance it's a good card, even though, like, some of the time you'll play it, your opponent will get an extra mana and then kill it right away. That won't feel great, but at the end of the day, I mean, they still spent whatever their card, their removal to kill your two mana card, so not a big deal. Are there any other cards you want to touch on in the multicolor here that are, like, particularly strong?
Eleni is really strong.
Green white, 3/5, in web, 1 green white. Whenever you cast a creature spell, create a 1/1, and then you can pay 5 to give all your creatures +2/+2. Yeah, that is really strong. And green white, you know, is a color combination you're going to be pretty often, so that's nice.
Yeah, also totally splashable. Boris, in that category, I guess, of red splashable cards, particularly, you can play the Leyline Weaver on turn 2 and then tap the Weaver and web this. You have a 6/5 trample. If you have an untapped land, you can replay your Leyline Weaver, so it's not even that costly.
Right, man. Leyline Weaver is kind of an all-star, man.
But even in webbing this on turn a million, you know, it's a large trampler if you returned anything to your hand. You want to inweb with this more than you want to hard cast it by a lot because it scales with that. But, you know, if you inweb a 2-drop at any point in the game, a 6/5 trample will be something your opponent is very scared of and has to care about. And it's only 2 mana at those later points in the game, too.
This next card, I have had the joy of playing with it. Brocco, Heartless Hunter. 1 green-black, 4/3 trample. Whenever a creature an opponent controls with the greatest power among creatures that player controls dies, draw a card and put a counter on Brocco.
I have had this too, and let me say my opponents did not understand what was going to happen when this isn't played.
No!
I think it's really easy to think of, you know, this card's a bounty hunter, and I guess when you think of bounty hunting, you think of using removal spells.
But
when my opponent has 2 3/3s and I attack with my 3/3 and they trade, I'm drawing a card and getting a counter on this guy, you know?
Right, totally. And, you know,
it's speaking not to once the removal turn, point, it works on both players' turns.
Speaking of the removal point, you know, you're probably the creature you're going to want to kill with the removal is the one with the greatest power anyways, most of the time.
I guess this hadn't come up for me. I don't know if it wasn't in my deck, but the 2-mana -3/-3 is kind of a non-bow.
A bummer. Sure.
But yeah, this card in play makes combat like a nightmare for your opponent. Like, trading off creatures usually means their greatest power creature traded off.
Totally. I had this in play. My opponent attacked me with a 3/5, and then I instant speed killed their biggest creature. This drew a card, this got a counter, then I blocked their 3/5 with a 5/4, and... it died and that was their next biggest creature, so it drew a card and got another counter. Very strong card. Let's see.
Is your camera frozen on your end?
No.
Okay. Okay, so you're moving again.
It's probably fine, yeah. Okay, cool.
It's probably just my view.
Yeah. Was it frozen for a while or just right there?
Maybe like 30 seconds.
Okay. I'll see when I'm editing it.
I mean, this Gloria card seems strong, but it's red-white, so you kind of have to be the green-white deck splashing red, I think.
But right, and it's kind of like an aggressive cheap card. I mean, if you got some Leyline Weavers, you might do it.
Yeah, lots of strong rares here. Also, yeah, I mentioned, weirdly, there's like one rare for all these two-color like enemy combos, except black-white, like I mentioned, has a rare and a mythic rare. And on top of that, black and white are two of the strongest colors. So I do think it's not weird to maybe end up black-white if you open one or both of these and just have strong white and black cards.
Yeah, and especially since, you know, this set's got a lot of core set elements where it's just who can play the bigger, better creatures and kill your opponent's bigger, better creatures. And black-white in general is pretty suited well for that. It's got the best removal. It's got some grindy cards. So I could definitely see black-white being one of the two color pairs that you go to, or one of the ways that you avoid green.
I guess I'll also point out a lot of these black-red gold cards are not really that impressive.
They're really not. Mostly because the synergy itself just doesn't really work well. So you don't really want to put like this Ruzik guy in your deck.
The 4/3 that can return something that costs 3 or less, I've played with that. I didn't even use the Mayhem part of it.
Oh, sure.
It's weird because the thing has to attack each turn of Fable. There's some green mana dorks are some of the better things to return with this because you can just tap them pre-combat every turn.
Yeah, that makes sense. Lots of good multicolor cards. Let's move on to some of the artifacts that you would maybe pick ones that... what are some you would always play?
Always play... Let's see. Physic, definitely. The rare.
Okay.
You don't need other artifacts or creatures. It just puts a counter on itself. It has vigilance. It gets huge. It can threaten to draw cards.
Totally.
It gets better if you can put counters on more of your things, but don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. I found this Goro Rel to be a pretty good card.
Yeah, I'd probably always play Goro Rel.
Mm-hmm. Do you like Giant Craft Helm?
I do, but I don't think I'd always play it. I think you do want to have this ETB trigger for your mana value 5 or greater things happening in your deck. Not that you have to play an absurd amount of 5 drops, but you're certainly going to have pools where the number of actual creatures you have with mana value 5 or greater might be like 1 or 2, and I'm thinking more like 4 or 5 is what you're looking at.
Okay, you don't really want to just pay 5 to equip it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Opulent Valet is a card. I guess I wouldn't play it in every pool, but if I needed like some in web enablers, it's a pretty solid card.
Yeah.
What about this?
Steel Web Surveyor, it gets a pass for being like a spider. I don't play it in all my decks that need fixing. Sometimes your fixing is good enough that you don't need it, but if you're desperate for fixing, I think you should play this, and you might have synergies with spiders too.
Yeah, 2 mana, 2/1 reach isn't too bad. They've made a lot of these cards in the past, and it really depends on how good the creature is that this effect's playable, I would say. Like, usually the ones that are just vanilla aren't good. This one's Reach and a Spider, that's something. What about Treat Trolley? Do you have any Treat Trolleys in your 5-color deck?
No, I didn't. I probably would have played it if I had it.
Okay. 3 mana, any color mana rock, but you get a food token. Food token's, like, kind of weak, right?
Yeah, this is not a great mana list.
No, I think this might be one of the cards that people overplay. I basically probably would only play it in like 4 or 5 color decks.
Yeah, or like if your bomb that you're splashing is particularly expensive, once again, Niche comes to mind.
Right. Yeah, but I wouldn't use it as like an excuse to just play a regular 3-color deck.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, try not to play it.
The fixing comes in so many better cards in this format too.
And then we got all
like
these
Surveil lands are good. I mean, I haven't had this decision yet, but if I was a straight 2-color deck that didn't need to splash, let's say I'm the green-white aggro deck, like I might play the white-blue or the red-green Surveil land at least one copy in my deck. Like, it's a mana sink that lets you surveil.
Okay, that's good to know. I have found them to be pretty good. But it's good to know that you would play them even outside that. So while we're at it, while I still have you, let's do a quick sealed pull. I think that pretty much covers everything for our audio-only portion. Thanks, everyone, for listening over on that side. If you want to hop over to YouTube, we're going to do a quick seal pull on Arena. Okay. Do you see Arena okay?
I do, yeah. Crystal clear.
10 rares. It's not very common, right?
Your audio is sometimes being weird.
I wonder if my computer can't handle this. I guess we're going to find out.
Okay, so, yeah, we'll see.
Don't think this is going to be a Verilax deck.
No, doesn't look like much of a base white deck unless we end up with a bunch of green-white gold card things. Certainly could splash the white cards. There are some of them there. Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at our fixing right away. That's usually a good start. So we've got a Tri-Land, an Evolving Wilds, a couple lands in blue-white, and then a blue-black lands.
A lot of support to maybe be Bant, green-white, splash blue.
Xan, this fella.
I guess we have Kren, okay, so
that's mostly the fixing.
Having red is interesting, but might not be available.
Yeah, so this is like kind of a pretty different play. We actually didn't talk about this card. Do you find this to be a huge pull?
I have not played with it, but it looks really good.
5-inch lifelink. Yeah. We only have one way, right? Well, I guess we have the...
So, like, even if somehow it was terrible for you to exchange life totals, you could just play a 5-5 Vigilance lifelink.
Right.
But obviously, if you're ever lower than life, you're going to do it. And if you're just, like, a little higher on life, or, you know, if it's, like, you're at 15 and they're at 12, like, that's amazing, probably.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Whenever a Spider Control enters, draw a card. So we've got some good, like,
spiders.
Yeah. Gold, green, white cards.
Yeah, and also the green-white uncommon 2-drop we have is a spider that's really easy to bounce within web and rewards you for doing it.
Right, so that's all pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, we have a...
This is green, and it's also kind of white.
We have two Celestine Archivists.
This makes a treasure. Yeah.
Yep. I'm definitely looking at like how far we can get with just
green-white. Almost certainly green.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, let's look at the white here. This one's pretty nice. Because it's just a cheap and web guy.
Yep, but we have the rare one.
That's basically this card also. Card,
but happy that it has a different
just
name.
What we talked about, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. The Mothwing Shroud.
Probably a City Pigeon
Spectacular
deck.
Tactics. Okay, how much in web do we actually have? We just have 2, 3, 4. Okay, the Pigeon probably makes it.
Yeah. The Pastry seems kind of... good with all these little flyers.
Yeah. Might be one we add later. Let's see. So black's got
Terminus.
Like this as a removal spell.
Yep. But
would you splash Terminus?
Probably.
Okay.
If I was the type, I mean, this deck's looking like it might be more of the cohesive white-green aggro type of deck that's closer to a draft deck, which makes splashing a little bit worse.
Mm-hmm. And these aren't
like,
super insane.
Yeah, for the Kren, it's also like, I have a little bit of incentive, actually, to just want to play a Mountain and Kren.
Right, a Mountain
which
with the Cityscape.
Yeah, and like because we have all these green-white 2-drops... I don't want to... Oh, and we have the Xan, too. That's nice. But, like, playing an island or a swamp would be pretty costly because we just mostly want all our lands to make either green or white. And I haven't checked yet, but I would guess that splashing red to flip Kren might be better than any blue or black card we have.
Probably. This could give us red, and it's also decent within web, so probably that.
This might be the type of deck, too, that can play the Lead the Stampede
the carvings.
Effect. I forgot. Yeah, carvings.
Yeah. And it's got a red. Let's see the creature count. Yeah, we're already up to 16. And this is, we need four more cards. What's the removal situation? We might have to...
Yeah, we might play this Perilous Revenge. I think in white we had the Referee too, right?
Yeah, you're right.
And I think the 3-mana 2-drop is pretty good too. I don't know, this looks like a pretty straightforward green-white deck to me.
Something. Yeah, kind of funny how this is like just the easiest pool I've ever built for this set.
Yeah, I mean, I had mentioned it kind of in passing, but like I said, this is, you know, the best draft archetype, and this set's kind of small, so I just don't think it's weird that this is kind of what your deck might look like. especially, you know, we have effectively like 4 gold, green, white uncommons, which is probably pretty above the mark, but that's
and lots of 2-drops. Really... When you're building an aggressive deck and sealed, you have to make sure you have lots of 2-drops, and we do. I don't think we need to play this lizard. We only have a few cards that trigger it.
I don't think so either.
So we get one more card. It could be like Valet or a Crime Scene Instructor or the Pastry.
The Pastry seems fine.
Could be a red card, I guess, if any of these are worth it.
Yeah, or you know, we didn't mention it. It's in the red section when it's in your pool, but there's a 5-mana deal 5. But Wisecrack with a mountain is not crazy to me. Because we're having like 4-ish red sources with the archaeologist, and we have a favorite fighter too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably play Wisecrack.
We were a little low on removal. Okay, so we play these. Okay, so would you play this university campus?
No, not in a deck like this.
Probably not, right?
Yeah, and we already have 2 tap lands because we're going to play Urban Retreat. You know, even if you don't do the web sling thing with it, it's just a green white tap land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the one mountain gives us 1-2, like essentially kind of like 4 sources for Wisecrack and Kren.
And yeah, and also like Kren is not, just... you know, Kren, this is a deck that is going to take full advantage of the front half of Kren and be a kind of an aggressive beatdown deck. Like I said, the reason you really want to play red sources with Kren is because flipping it is completely absurd, but it's also a really strong card when you don't flip it in a deck like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And then, yeah, the mana is really simple too. Just straight down the middle, everything's green and white. Got 9 of each source. Pretty nice deck.
Yeah. I think when your pool is most easy, it's probably going to be green-white like this, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, maybe you didn't get too much from watching us do that because we did it so quickly and it was, like, pretty obvious. One of the things that you can take away is how easily we dismiss these other cards. So you can kind of look at the other things and just none of this was appealing at all, really.
Yeah, the saddest card in our sideboard to me is Terminus of Return by a lot. That's...
Totally, yeah. That's probably the best card we didn't play, but I mean, like, these aren't good.
But I don't think we have a path to put like Kren and Terminus Return in our deck, and I think Kren is like the best card in our entire pool.
Right.
And also,
I mean, we could like switch to green black, but then we don't get to use these gold, green, white cards that fit so well.
Yeah, Jenny and Hoppy seems like an amazing card to me in this type of deck, and you don't want to be a type of deck playing a lot of colors if you're playing with it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I'm going to screenshot this. Post it in the... hold up. Post it in the Discord. I got to put... there we go. There we go. So, yeah. I mean, I will say the building the sealed pools for this format hasn't been too crazy compared to a lot of seals, or formats, rather. But yeah, this one's
pretty easy. It can get more interesting when you have a lot of things to splash, for sure.
Totally. Omen Pass sealed. Not the most interesting format. Hopefully you guys found some value in that. So this weekend is the arena qualifier, right? Or is it next weekend? It's this weekend. Okay.
No, this weekend. And Friday, there's still the opportunity to qualify for it with best of 3.
Gotcha. Okay, so pretty relevant format, pretty relevant tournament, even though, you know, it's not the coolest format or whatever. So, thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Next time.
Okay, so pretty soon here, we're going to have some standard bans, apparently. Maybe it's not guaranteed, but it's like, may as well be guaranteed, I think. They've made a statement about it.
Yeah.
It took them a while. Obviously, people kind of thought that bans might happen earlier, but they came out and said that they're acknowledging the format. They know that VV in particular was probably a problem, but they're going to wait till the RCQ season's end.
Yep.
Interestingly, I heard a little bit about some of my local RCQs, and apparently the people showing up, the numbers have plummeted.
Definitely.
Which I feel like, you could have predicted that, but do you think they thought that wouldn't happen? Like, is that the reason they didn't ban things? Because they specifically said they didn't want to mess with the RCQs.
Yeah, I don't know. I live in, you know, New Mexico, where it's already low attendance when standard's not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, modern is like the most popular format here, and was still our biggest RCQs are like 24 people when people actually really like modern.
Right. Yeah. So that's interesting. The other thing to think about is, like, what do you think their options are for bannings? I was thinking that a bit today.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about that a lot, actually, because it's going to impact, you know, the first Pro Tour of 2026, which I'm qualified for. Okay. So there'll be bannings, and then there'll be worlds, and then I'll have that info to work with. So
right.
I'd be surprised if VB survives, because the prowess deck has also just been around so long. I don't think people would be happy if the best deck in standard was blue red prowess with VB, right? Like,
this sounds like it's almost like VB, they gave VB a chance to be kind of a fair card, and even if, like, most of us think, I mean, I certainly think probably if you ban like Prof and Cauldron, probably VV's okay. But at this point, it's like,
yeah,
it struck out twice. You don't want to risk it. You probably just ban VV.
I feel like I'm the only person that ever mentions how strong Prof's is, but
yeah, I feel like Prof's needs to go too, man.
Let's say they banned both VV and Cauldron. I just imagine the universe is going to be, you have the same blue red Prof's deck. Is that good enough? By itself, no, but is that deck full of looting and rummaging, and if they find literally any other second thing to do?
Like, right, from new sets even, maybe, right?
Yeah, there's already precedent, like Helping Hand and Oculus is what they used to do, and that's still legal, and we're going to get Hollowed Fountain and Steam Vents in Norwynn, so the mana for that probably should be good.
I mean, it's just two mana things that cantrip.
Helping Hand
just have insane value, yeah.
Like, you know, the upside of Helping Hand Oculus is not as good as the upside of VV Cauldron. But when you're playing a bunch of Fear of Missing Outs and Winter Night Stories and Steam Core Scholars, each of those cards individually has a lot more opportunity to do something. You know, you can just cast Oculus, you can just Helping Hands a FOMO, and that's fine. And that's, you know, that's the thing that's already been proven to be done, and there might be something even better.
Right. It'll be interesting to see if they, because of the Scorched Earth path they took last time, if they repeat that or if they think that that was a mistake and then only ban a few cards.
Yeah, I was thinking too. I think they will not unban anything. That's probably easy not. Prediction.
There's too many variables.
Yeah, it looks way too bad to unban Hopeless Nightmare or whatever, and then Hopeless Nightmare is the best deck in standard or whatever, you know.
Right. Whatever. It's also just too many. If they change too many things, it's too hard to predict anyways. So you might as well not do that. I will say, like, if I was them, I think I would use this as an opportunity to experiment with doing something different than they normally do. So maybe, like, go Scorched Earth again and see if that actually produces a good format. It's possible it won't.
Yeah.
But, like, if you hit VV and maybe like Screaming Nemesis and Profs and something else you can think of, Kaito, I don't know.
Yeah, Kaito would probably have to be up there.
And then you get to a good format. And whether you do or don't, then at least in the future, when this sort of thing comes up, you'll have an idea of what the better thing to do is, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and like the Cauldron thing's interesting by itself too, because like, I've played with Cauldron before VV was a card. You know, Arcanus, the tap draw three cards creature, is in standard, weirdly, from Foundations. There's loot. There's certainly not this crazy pop-off potential with these types of cards, but there's still some value things you can do. And I guess, like, an annoying part of Cauldron that people don't talk about that much is it's just, like, main deck graveyard hate.
Yeah. I mean, that's so definitely... That's definitely warping the format, right?
Yeah, I guess on the topic of Scorched Earth, you know, I saw on the standard qualifier weekends, Scott McNamara qualified with a blue-green Omniscience deck that he played at the regional in Orlando, too, that I don't think he did well in the regional, but then he ended up, you know, qualifying for the Arena Championship with it. And that deck, it's funny, it's literally all four ofs, including four forests and four islands.
I saw it. Yeah, it was funny.
But you know,
one hit omniscience too. Is that
not from power level? But you know, it's like that's kind of a disaster again, right? Place. If they ban a bunch of stuff, and the best deck in standard is omniscience with Meringue River Regents again.
Yeah,
that one's probably less likely because I think kind of the concept behind that deck is that the blue red cauldron deck is not that interactive and also has very specific interaction, and you kind of played to beat that interaction.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's tough. I mean, I think, what do you think about Riddler? I was thinking about Riddler might
be a Riddler's
too.
A crazy card. I mean, that card's gonna be part of standard for a while. I'm not sure if that's
little companion. It's a pretty sweet card. I think people like it, but I mean,
it makes me want more.
It's kind of profs in a way. It's that same kind of thing where it's like you just two mana cantrip something, your opponent can't really interact with it, and then later in the game you have this thing. It's not quite as egregious, right?
It's clunkier, at least.
Yeah, and then as long as they don't print any like ephemerate adjacent cards, it should be okay.
Yeah, there is one already in standard, Splash Portal, but that's a sorcery and pretty bad card.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Riddler is funny because when cards like that end up being like the best card in standard, hypothetically, if they ban other cards, it just makes me wish that like Artfire Hero was legal or Monstrous Rage, you know, like I kind of really hate those Battle of Arms that are like, okay, the best thing to do in standard is to play the best two for ones and as many of them as possible and never try
or
to really
have
kill
the
your
most
opponent.
Haymakers in the sideboard.
Yeah.
Main deck, basically, or in the sideboard, Or mice. They didn't deserve to go, I don't think.
Yeah, some cool Lorwyn things with changelings. I don't know if you saw, like, the two in the green, 1/1. When it enters, make a tapped Mutavault. That card's awesome.
Pretty sweet, yeah.
I'm hoping it's good enough to see play in standard. Might not. Well, obviously, at some point,
a good chance.
It's two sets away, so our top 10 episode, it might not even make top 10, but that card's awesome. I love it. Traveling Chocobo is cool because you'd get two Mutavaults off it, and those Mutavaults would each give double landfall.
And they'd be birds for your bird deck.
Yeah, and you can cast it off the top of your library because it's a bird.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So, interesting discussion around bans. Yeah, we'll have to see what they do.
Yeah. I don't envy their position. I'm sure whatever they do, things are not going to look... It's going to be really hard for them to do something and things to look good the week after they do it or by Worlds or whatever.
Yeah, it's almost going to be impossible because of the particular position they're in. That's why I think they should just use it as a learning opportunity, which honestly they probably will do. I bet their mindset will be kind of like that.